Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
On today's episode, the guys discuss the final episodes 9 and 10 of The Last Dance, Michael Jordan versus Reggie Miller versus the Utah Jazz, and go beyond the numbers of Steve Kerr's NBA career. They also share their final thoughts about the 10-part documentary. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number for the day, 5.6 million. Amit, that was the average number of viewers of The Last Dance. I can't believe it's come to a close. We'll talk about that more in a bit. The number one market, no surprise, Chicago. Number two, North Carolina. Number three was my area, San Jose, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, for average ratings. So we're definitely watching it out here, but New York City was not in the top five. So what's up with that, man? What's up?
So first of all, you got Steve Kerr over there, so that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, gotcha.
Right. That one tracks. And come on, no one wants to see Michael beat the Knicks over and over again for all of his career. No one needs that.
That's no one fair. Needs that.
My number is $25 million. And what is $25 million, Telly?
We got large numbers this week.
That's right. $25 million. In 1996, the Knicks offered MJ $25 million for a year, which would have been a 653% raise from what he was making at that time. Jordan's agent took that number to the Bulls, and later that year, his salary was bumped up to $33.14 million. Now, to equate that to today's earnings, a player today would be making $134.4 million.
For our first story, we're going to jump right in and give you our reactions to episode 9 of The Last Dance. And in this episode, they cover the Pacers, the flu game, and Steve Kerr.
So the Pacers piece was pretty cool. I thought it was kind of funny when I listened to Jalen and Jacoby in the after episode podcast that they do every episode. They talked about how hard it was to get Reggie to do this. Like, they kept calling and calling, and he just wouldn't. So I think a lot of this is still pretty raw for him, but I could not stop laughing when Jordan referred to himself as Black Jesus. Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus. Like, that is, come on, that is gold. That is gold. So I thought that was a nice kind of tone to put in there to kind of start, and I guess Jordan could talk some trash with the best of them.
Shouts out to Jalen and Jacoby. Just shouts out to them. And I thought it was hilarious because Reggie Miller looked both pissed, amazed, and like he was about to laugh all at the same time during that part. So that was pretty amazing.
So you can, and you got to think this is like so many years after. Can you imagine like in the moment? Oh my God. But fast forwarding a little bit, game four. Miller with the winning shot. Are we saying there was a light push?
A light push? A two-handed light push?
Just a light redirecting of the player to make that shot. But hey, it happened. It kept the series going. And I thought that was they probably could have dedicated a lot more time to that specific series, but you know, I think the little cool insight they had at the end was Jordan catching Bird afterwards after game seven. They won, they're leaving, and Jordan says, "Now you can work on your golf game." But that's just a little slight at the end was just great. I love that dig. But favorite part of that entire video montage and Reggie going back and forth was when the shot's made and there's 0.7 seconds left, there's that live shot of Bird, and his expression does not change when Miller hits that shot.
Jalen Rose pointed it out. Jalen Rose told Jason, the director of The Last Dance, go back, rewind the tape, look at Larry Bird's face.
Yeah.
Go back.
He does not change his face. And I was like, wait, because you see, and it's perfect, right? Because right behind him, the entire stadium is going crazy. You see everyone, and he doesn't flinch. He doesn't blink. He's just like, all right. And it's like, hey, 0.7 seconds left. MJ's got the ball. And then, of course, right, almost storybook fashion, he makes the shot. It goes in and comes out, and that's the game.
Right? Yeah.
And it's just like, to compare that to modern day, that was, for the longest time, that was Tom Brady. Right? Doesn't matter what your lead is. You give Brady the ball. Oh, you're going to score? Oh, it's a Super Bowl? Well, if you give him more than 30 seconds, you could be in trouble.
Yep.
Like, game there was just this idea that you hand him the ball, and it doesn't matter. Anywhere on the court, he'll find a way to make it. So I thought that was just a really cool way to go back into that and really point something out that I'm sure no one noticed in the moment.
No. The whole stadium's rocking. Everybody's going crazy. The last thing you're thinking is like, coach is pissed. I made the shot. Reggie rushed it. And actually wasn't the called play. Reggie switched up the play. I'm sure whatever Larry Bird drew up was something that would take up a little more time, leaving less time on the clock. So,
I mean, yeah. 0.7 seconds, less time on the clock. Come on.
I mean, but every second counts, as evidenced by that shot Jordan put up.
I know, right? Just enough time to inbound and go.
Every second counts. And I agree with you 100%. This part just felt rushed on it. Like, I wanted more. I wanted more of the Pacers series. I wanted more Reggie Miller. I wanted more, like, Jordan Reggie Miller trash talk. And I was hoping for a pass of the iPad to get reactions to what Reggie Miller was saying. Maybe it happened. Maybe they didn't have time to throw it in there. But, man, well, yeah, sure. I definitely wanted more of the Pacers series in there.
I'm sure Jason's listening. I'm sure Jason's out there listening. Director's cut.
Beyonder, by the way, he's a huge Beyonder. Shouts out to Jason Ayer. Huge Beyonder.
Director's cut, bro. We need it. We need all that. We need all that extra footage.
We demand it. Jalen demands it. We demand it.
Everyone's
demanding it.
So,
the other thing they cover in this one, Amit, flu game, aka food poisoning game. It just doesn't sound as sexy as flu game, though. It's just, you know, not.
this is the real Pizzagate. This is the real Pizzagate. I saw Pizzagate was trending again on Twitter. This is the real Pizzagate right here.
That's true. So June 11th, 1997, game five of the NBA Finals with the series tied 2-2. No chance Jordan would miss that. So apparently the story goes, June 10th, Michael Jordan was hungry because his boys ordered food without him, Amit. They didn't wait to order food with him, and they were in Utah where things close early, and he had no other options for food. So they call up a pizza place, and as his agent tells it, five guys rolled up to the door delivering one pizza. I mean, have you ever had five people deliver you a pizza before?
I mean, it's different times now, right? I can't even get one person to deliver me anything now. I gotta go downstairs and get it myself. But no, normally it's one guy and he leaves it at like the doorstep, you know, nowadays. No, but for what it's worth, at that time, you knew that those guys knew it was Jordan, right? So Michael Jordan, he's won five in a row, or, you know, he's won five championships. If I get a chance to peek in and see him, I'd go.
Yeah. So we got five dudes delivering a pizza. We have rumors talking about Jordan might have been hungover. Was he really sick? Was he just faking it and playing mind games? But what really brought this to light, Amit, 2 a.m, he's curled up in a ball. He called his mom. You do not call your mom in those other circumstances. This was definitely real. When he calls his mom for help and mom shows up at the room, this is real. He is sick.
Yeah, I mean, everything that they showed, everything we've heard and seen, this was bad. What blew my mind is how many people didn't know that this was a pizza-related situation. I thought it was common knowledge that he ate some pizza. There was some bad food poisoning. Before the game, before the documentary, before the episode ended, there were numerous companies online who had already had shirts that were printed out saying, don't buy pizza in Salt Lake.
Wow. Salt Lake City Pizza Company, they're coming for you.
Right.
So Mike shows up to the game. He can barely walk. He can't hold down fluids. He's considering getting an IV. They're pumping him full of Gatorade. And the Jazz build up, and there's a game to play, by the way, just a side note. The Jazz build up a 16-point lead in the first quarter. In the second quarter, Jordan puts up 17 points alone. He ends up putting up 38 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and a block, including a 3-pointer with less than a minute left that gave the Bulls the lead, and they never looked back after that point. I think one of the most memorable images of this game, I mean, I can remember it like it's yesterday, is Mike making a shot, a timeout being called, and Scottie Pippen literally carrying Mike to the bench, like literally carrying him, putting a towel over his head, and like you can tell he can't even stand under his own power during the timeout. The Bulls end up winning that game 90-88. And that was just crazy to get some of the backstory, including Amit, Michael Jordan, for those that didn't know, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, fun fact, is a spitter, Amit. He spits on his food. He claims his food through spitting. You know, the thing we all did when we were 5 or 6, or like, I'm not sharing with you, na 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 boo boo.
Yeah, so you know, the thought process for me was, there's 5 guys or 3 guys or how many guys in a hotel room and a pizza's delivered and no one else eats it, even if they just ate? Come on. But if you spit on it, I get you. I get you on that one. But you know what's funny? I was thinking about this. Me and Michael Jordan have something in common. When you have the Venn diagram, Michael Jordan on one side, me on the other side, the overlapping piece, able to finish a whole pizza by myself.
Oh, man. You both got that. Throw me in there. I can definitely devour a pizza too, especially those pizzas y'all got over there in New York City, man. I'm a little jealous.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna have to get some Lucali again.
Got that New York City Brooklyn pizza, you know what I'm saying? That I'm definitely been craving that during.
Yeah, I'll get some pictures of DeForest for you, maybe some Lucali. We'll see.
So the other thing they cover in this episode, episode 9 of The Last Dance, is Steve Kerr. Stephen Douglas Kerr, okay? Stephen Douglas Kerr, I'm going to say
the whole name. What's with you middle names, man?
Put some respect on it, because we learned a lot about Steve Kerr during this time.
Yeah, you know, Steve Kerr is, first of all, Steve should have his own documentary.
Yes.
Steve should most definitely have his own documentary. His entire backstory, his family, sort of the surroundings of how his father was essentially, you know, murdered at this university. All of that while he's, you know, going to college and kind of figuring his own world, you know, all of that together is, it's crazy that he, even if you look at him just as a, you know, like a role player, right? He's not a star, not a superstar, but he was a very important role player. And, you know, all the rings he has contest to that. But it's just, it's such a complex story that says so much about his worldviews. You've heard him be very, very vocal over the past couple of years about social justice issues. So there's so much depth there to him beyond basketball, that he definitely could have his own piece. And it was nice to see that they gave him, I think it was like an 8 or 9 minute segment. So it was kind of cool to get to know him. You saw his mother. They had some pretty cool footage of you know, him growing up. So that was just a really nice piece to add in there, to give a little background about him.
Yeah, and just the overall stand-up human being. Like Steve Kerr just seems like a stand-up guy to me.
Also, side note, a potential Knicks coach. I mean, he was smart, and he went to Golden State, and then they won the championship that year. But the Knicks wanted him, and I think they might have, and I got to go find this, they may have actually had a deal in principle to get him before he signed with Golden State.
The Knicks with you, man. What's up with everything come back to the Knicks with you?
Listen, you're middle naming everyone. I got to talk about the Knicks and how they always screw it up.
Okay, that's true. That's fair. So I share a birthday with Steve, okay? And my middle name is Steven. So September 27th, fun fact, also Lil Wayne's birthday. We're all a little gangster. We're all a little gangster. So I got to drop some beyond the numbers facts here on Steve Kerr and his career. So for those that don't know, Steve Kerr has the highest career three-point percentage in NBA history for any player with at least 250 three-pointers made at 45.4%. He also, for a period of time, held the NBA record for highest three-point percentage in a season at 52.4% until that record was broken by Kyle Korver in 2010. Steve Kerr actually beat Michael Jordan in something on it. He beat Michael Jordan in something. He became only the second player in NBA history that was not part of the 1960s Boston Celtics dynasty to win four straight NBA titles. The other person being Frank Saul, who won four straight with Rochester and Minneapolis from 1951 to 1954. Taking that a step further, they were also the only two players in NBA history to have won two championships with two different teams in consecutive seasons until Patrick McCaw, formerly of the Golden State Warriors, he won it with the Warriors in 2018, and then he ran it back with Toronto and ended up winning it with them. During his NBA career, Steve Kerr played 910 regular season games. He retired as the league's all-time leader in single-season three-point shooting percentage at 52% and career three-point shooting percentage at 45%. He won a total of five NBA championships as a player. He wasn't done, Amit. Your Bulls should have had Steve Kerr as their coach, who in 2015, as an NBA rookie head coach, broke the regular season record for most wins with 68. Those Warriors, my Warriors from out here, San Francisco Warriors, Oakland Warriors, the Bay's Warriors, went on to win the 2015 NBA Finals, and that made Kerr the first rookie coach to win a championship since Pat Riley did it in 1982 with the Lakers. And either way that year, even though LeBron had the man fired, David Blatt was also a rookie head coach. So either way, a rookie head coach would have won the finals. Going a step further, it was the first time a pair of rookie head coaches faced each other in the NBA finals since the first year of the NBA's existence in 1947 with Eddie Gottlieb of the Philadelphia Warriors and Harold Olsen of the Chicago Stags competing against one another. So
yeah, you really went down the black hole. You went down the black hole of NBA Finals data and stats.
You know, nice. Beyond the numbers, I had to do a little digging.
You have definitely found the beyond. You have found it.
I did. I just try to give Steve his due. I try to give him his due.
Hey, I'm a big fan. He would have come here and been very disappointed in New York. So I'm glad he went to a winning situation.
Yeah, and Steve went from breaking records to breaking boards. As we know, game one of the 2016 finals with the Warriors, when he punched and broke the board during a timeout. So just I wanted to ask you a question, Amit. We saw he punched that board during a timeout during the Warriors game. It shattered. Can you tell me how hard he punched Michael Jordan? There's no video evidence, but if somebody pops you in the eye, you must have hit him pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, and in fact, I'm sure Michael was kind of thrown off.
Right?
Like, wait, what just happened? Did this man just do this?
Hit. This guy can hit.
Yeah.
Always forgiven. Steve and Mike made up. And one of the parts I really enjoyed of this episode is when Michael Jordan said, tonight, Steve Kerr earned his wings. And I'm very happy for Steve. Then during the parade during that year, he says, well, they drew up the play for Michael, and I had to bail Michael out again and make a big three to win the series. So I just will continue to bail out Michael Jordan. You got to have some cojones to say things like that. And I think Steve Kerr's got him.
Great sense of humor, man. Just a great sense of humor.
Yeah, I agree.
So once again in this episode, you see another sort of peripheral character in Michael's life taking a much bigger role. And this time it was Gus Lett, right? And Gus was essentially, I would get, not part of Michael's security team, really, but he was kind of like the guy that made sure he could get from spot to spot. He was kind of his caretaker and really became one of Michael's father figures, and was really there as a support figure for Michael after his father died. So it was cool to see that relationship. And then, unfortunately, as it comes out to play, you know, Gus ended up having cancer. And so it was really touching to see how Michael went above and beyond to make sure he was there for Gus and his family the whole time. So that was a neat little insight. There were a lot of little things we learned about Michael. You know, whether it's bringing the kids in before the game to get a chance to get to know him and to meet the team, all those little things he did. But I think from this 10-part series, they're not with us anymore, but Gus and John Michael would have had some crazy stories to add, I have to believe, from all the things they've seen. And it was just kind of cool to see those kind of peripheral characters just have such a big impact on this guy that's just bigger than the game in so many ways. For our second story, we're gonna talk about our reactions to the last episode of The Last Dance. And this was really the Utah Jazz series.
Yeah, it was all the Jazz series.
It really was, and it was so 9 and 10. Like we said, tough for Jazz fans. And this one, from a production standpoint, they didn't even finish putting this together till, what, I think Wednesday or Thursday before it aired?
Yes, which is crazy to me.
And they're putting all this together. Everyone's in quarantine, so you're doing it from home studios and sending files over and watching. And I'm sure, you know, they had the framework and everything down, but still not completed. So that's crazy. Just from a production standpoint, pretty crazy.
Shouts out to Jason Hare. Shouts out to Jason Hare, who got it done.
Jason, director's cut, bro. Director's cut.
We got to have him on the show, Armin. We really got to have him on the show.
I mean, give it a week or two once his press conferences and his schedule opens up a little bit. Might be a little easier.
I think sleep, man. I think he's going to sleep for a week.
That's fair. That's fair.
So, what surprise? We immediately go into this episode 10, Armin. And what shocked me, how savage are Utah Jazz fans? This is ridiculous. I thought people were nice there, howdy ho, neighbor, hey. People ski and they just take it real easy. And Michael Jordan's kids are like, we weren't allowed to go to Utah games because people were too crazy up there.
Oh yeah, yeah, come on. My wife was at game 3 or 4 in Utah in the 97 series.
Subtle plug.
No, but I'm saying savages, absolute savages.
That's crazy. Oh man, I have so many questions. We're gonna have to have her on the show now.
Yeah, we're gonna have after show with just her talking about that.
So think about this, Amit. The Utah Jazz swept the regular season series with the Bulls. Had the Bulls won one of the games, they would have had home court advantage for the finals. And they wouldn't have had to travel to Utah after game 7 against the Pacers the next day. and perhaps no flu game on it. May never have happened if the Bulls win one of the games they played the Jazz that year.
It's very true.
So
I've
to
actually
me,
never thought of it that way.
It will change the entire history. It will change the entire dynamic of the finals, because if they don't travel, they're more well rested, right? Utah would have to travel to Chicago for game one. And again, the flu game never happens. Chicago pizza, I don't think, causes all those issues that Salt Lake City pizza does.
Yep.
So we've gone through kind of this finals when we went beyond the numbers of Michael Jordan's second three-peat, but some highlights here that stood out definitely was game three. Game three, Amit, the Chicago Bulls only allowed the Utah Jazz to score 52 points. Chicago set the record for both the largest margin of victory with a 42-point blowout and the fewest points ever allowed in a finals game. But this highlighted, go ahead.
In any game in the shot clock era.
In any game in the shot clock era. Yep, you are correct, sir.
Which is, you would think that the Knicks would hold that record, but no, it's Utah. Look at that.
Well, you can't hold that record because, you know, just because you score a few points doesn't mean you're keeping other teams from scoring more points than you.
Fair.
So Michael screaming over from the bench, Bill's the only one who ain't score. Bill goes ahead and make a shot. Every Chicago Bull scored, Amit, including Dickie Simpkins. Look that up. Dickie Simpkins was on the 97-98 Bulls.
Hey, listen. Think about all those dudes that have rings because of Jordan and all the guys that don't have rings because of Jordan.
Yeah. I mean, we follow sports. We have this podcast. We do research. I can honestly tell you, Amit, before I looked up information before we recorded this podcast, that I didn't know a Dickie Simpkins existed, nor did I know that he was on the 1997-98 Chicago Bulls. Honestly. Game five was the flu game, and we just talked about that, so no need to get back into that. But game six, Amit. One thing that I think a lot of people forget, because it was Jordan's last game with the Bulls, it was the last game of the dynasty, everything came to a close. Scottie Pippen was in and out of the locker room in excruciating back pain, which was crazy. And I think people forget. And you had some thoughts on how he was portrayed in The Last Dance and what the narrative was about Scottie throughout the documentary.
You know, it was so interesting that Pippen spent so much of the documentary upset about how his pay was, upset about how management treated him. Definitely did not like Jerry Krause in any way, shape, or form, right? And that's the feeling he got through the whole thing. But then at the end, he goes, you know, thankful for all the great people in my life, all the success that happened to me. Phil Jackson, greatest coach. Michael Jordan, greatest player. Jerry Krause, obviously the greatest general manager in the game. Obviously. I mean, if you look at how him, specifically Scottie and Michael, the way they treated Jerry for most of the time that they were there, and not just behind closed doors, in front of the media and all that stuff, greatest general manager, maybe in hindsight looking back to it and saying, well, we did win all those championships with him at the helm, makes sense. But it was a nice twist. I just don't know. I think it's almost like, well, if it's the greatest coach and we got the greatest players, who put the coach and the players together? The general manager. So I guess it's got to be the greatest general manager, right? It's almost like he's like, well, 1 + 1, and I guess it kind of has to equal 2. It was nice for him to put it in there, but it just seems so weird compared to everything else that he said the entire series, and not just him, Michael, everyone.
Well, I listen to a lot of Joyce Meyer, and she has a quote, "We live life forward, we understand it backwards." And I think when you're in the moment, these guys were young 20-somethings. Scottie was trying to get paid. You know, there was a lot of guys, a lot of people involved. And they look back and they're one of the greatest teams of all time. They won 6 championships. it doesn't happen without Jerry. So I think looking back on it, like, yeah, he did a good job at his job. And at least they gave him his due, right?
It's getting deep, man. Getting very, very deep. I'm not expecting to get that kind of like depth from this, but you're really digging deep there. All right.
So back to game six, everybody. So Scotty's back. So like you said, his portrayal was pretty much an unhappy player. He wasn't getting his way. They did highlight the 1.4 seconds at the end of that game where he, you know, he refused to come off the bench, and they highlighted him holding out for money. What they end up highlighting here is game six. Scotty is in so much pain that he's getting shots in the back of the locker room. He's getting treatment of 5 minutes to be able to play 5 minutes. And Amit, my huge takeaway was, he tells Mike during the final minutes of the game, this hotly contested game, I'm taking the charge if they don't dish. So if anyone questions Scotty's heart or intensity or his will to win, to me, something's wrong with you, because he put his body on the line. I've had back pain and I've had back injuries. Volunteering to take a charge from Karl Malone, one of the largest players in the league at that time, wouldn't be on the top of my list to do with a messed up back. And we detailed for you the final shot in Beyond the Numbers, episode 5, how John Stockton had a chance to answer, but didn't. The other thing I didn't realize, Amit, was the follow through that Michael made his shot with. It wasn't a pose. It wasn't, I'm out of here, I'm the coolest player ever, let me leave my arm up. It was because he was so tired, he had a follow through on his shot to make sure it could reach the basket, because he missed like 5 or 6 shots in a row short because he had no legs under him.
Yeah, it's like, I got to use my whole body for this shot because that's the only way he's getting there.
Fingers and all.
There was no push on that play by MJ at the end there, right?
And who's the push on, Amit? Or who's the non-push on? Who is the guy? Who is telling us about was on the list?
I think he was a list man, right? I think it was it Brian Russell?
It was.
I think Bob Costas said it the best in there, right? The hand on his backside was the equivalent of a maitre d' showing someone to their table. Exactly. And you could see, like, he just happened to have his hand on, like, his jersey. I don't even know if he felt like the pressure on his leg when he turned. It happened to be there. And Michael's like, I didn't have to push him. He was already going that way. We're good.
And if you watch the video, you can tell. And he mentioned earlier, they showed other highlights, how he plays on his toes. And if you make a fake to the right and go left, he's diving right. He's so diving. You know, that was proven.
And he knew. But, right, so we have that crazy back and forth before that, right? Jordan makes the shot. But I think what doesn't get the credit that it probably deserves, right? Granted, you know, Michael's last game, final shot, I get it. It's iconic. Ron Harper's tip of that shot by John Stockton, that really sealed the victory. You don't see a ton of that. You see Jordan's shot. You don't see that last. You don't see the other one.
Honestly, didn't realize. I think everything gets lost after that shot.
Because there was still time on the clock. And this is John Stockton.
And Stockton almost made it.
Yeah. And Stockton was, it was cool to see another player from that, because this is the first time we see him. But it was cool to see him just kind of like, no, I mean, I didn't fear him. I didn't put him on a pedestal. He's a player. I'm a player. I got to go in there thinking that I'm just as good.
He's cut from that Stephen Douglas Kerr cloth.
Yeah. So you like the next part. I think you're a big fan of Karl Malone here.
I was never a Karl Malone fan. Don't get that twisted. I am not a Karl Malone fan. But what I did like, and what, yes, I think you're alluding to, is the fact that Karl Malone got beat 2 years in a row by Michael. And we see footage of him getting on the bus in enemy territory. He climbs on the Bulls bus to give respect to Michael, to Scotty, to Dennis Rodman, who they were going back and forth, almost fighting on the court, and give those guys respect and give them their due for the championship. which to me just stood in such stark contrast to what we talked about in an earlier episode with Isaiah. No love on the court, but no love off the court either, right? Like, if it was a gesture of we're handing you the torch, come see me in the locker room afterwards, you know, come see me on the bus, hit me up, text me. I don't know if they texted back then, but
not then.
You could call on the Skytel pager.
Yeah, you didn't text back then, for sure. There's no texting. You remember on those phones when you hit that internet button by mistake and you saw that little world start to spin?
Yep.
You just saw your entire family savings account disappear. You're like, oh God, once this connects, that's got to be thousands of dollars a second.
And just to type the letter C, you had to press three times.
Yeah, one message. Like, could you if MJ had to text "I'm back"?
Oh yeah, that would take forever.
It would take too long.
That would have took forever.
But no, it was a different. How many championships did Karl Malone win?
Karl Malone didn't win any championships. Mm.
So, I mean, I think if you ask Bird, right? Because Bird was the one to come to Isaiah's defense, right? I didn't shake hands. I don't care.
Bird also came to shake Michael's hand after his Pacers got beat.
but that's as a coach.
I mean, he still did it.
It's different as a coach.
I guess that's true. You can't lace him up.
Yeah. So, you know, we see the celebration. We see the parade. Right, there's all these little pieces. But we get another pretty cool... I thought one of the most amusing pieces of this entire... the entire series was whenever they handed Michael the iPad with video footage.
That will live on Amit forever in the American storytelling format. Just the passing of the iPad is gonna live on. That will be a huge takeaway from this, whether you like sports or not.
and the faces, right? Just the reactions. Like the live in the moment reactions were just priceless.
Yes. Yes, they were. You couldn't put a price on that. I think a lot of people could see what Mike thinks in real time. And that was huge. Because you never got to see that, really, right? He was always so composed and always thoughtful about what he said to the media versus what he said behind the scenes, which we're getting to see in the documentary. But you never got his real-time reaction to stuff.
So this piece was something that I think surprised everyone. I think this was really a shocking piece of this entire documentary. But what happens with Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Jordan?
I couldn't believe it. They hand Mike the iPad and he says, do you want to see... Director Jason Hare says, do you want to see Jerry Reinsdorf's reason for breaking up the 97-98 Bulls? And Michael saying, I never heard, I don't know the reason for? That was in shock. I had to pause for a second. I had to take a deep breath before seeing the rest of the documentary because I couldn't believe that Michael didn't know or have a reason of why this ever happened before. And we're talking 20, 30 years later.
And I don't think anyone knew that. I think this was new information for a lot of people. A lot of people in the industry, right? Because I think no one's talked about it. And I think whenever Reinsdorf's been asked, right? He gives his narrative. But so what happens here, right? Reinsdorf offers Phil Jackson a chance to return as coach.
Yeah.
Right. After the 82-0, doesn't matter. You're not coming back. Right. Mm-hmm. Reinsdorf comes back and says, come back to coach. But Phil was done at this point. Phil was completely done at this point. And you could tell it. He felt like this was a good time to step away. He felt some closure there. Hey, we got our double three-peat. We're good. And I think he would not have worked with Krause again. I think there would have been a whole different level of tension. And I could also argue, looking at that team and the way they were built and what was happening, even if they brought that exact team back together the following year, I don't know if they would have.
I will have to disagree with you, because what we learned was that the next season was a strike shortened season. So if you bring that band back together, Amit, and they only have to play 55 games, they know how to win. They know how to win in crunch time, and other teams don't have time to gel together if they get new pieces. I don't know, man. I don't know. I think they can pull it off again, especially in a short season. I don't bet against Mike. I can't bet against Mike.
But you got to think, Mike's a year older. I don't think on any circumstances that Bulls front office pays Pippen.
I think Mike goes in his pocket and pays Pippen himself if it came down to that.
I'm not buying that one. And I don't know how they do it without Rodman.
What was interesting too is that they showed Michael's reaction to this, and Mike said Pippen would be the hardest to get, but if I come back, Phil comes back, and I get Dennis back, Scottie would come back. And I think his argument was they would have a chance to at least present the information and let guys make their own decision. And what I didn't like from Jerry Reinsdorf's answer was that he removed any decision-making from the players. And you see in today's game, Amit, guys take pay cuts all the time to win, to play with their friends. LeBron took a pay cut. D-Wade took a pay cut. Chris Bosh took a pay cut so they could play together in Miami. And Jerry's answer literally was, oh, well, we wouldn't be able to pay Ron Harper, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman what they're worth on the free market, so we let them go. Let those guys decide. Give them a chance, because I guarantee you, for a chance to win four in a row, which no modern player has done except Stephen Douglas Kerr, which we just covered, but no modern player has been able to do since the 60s Celtics, Michael would have paid the Bulls for the chance to get four championships, because no one could ever argue with his legacy. And you could see in his face as they were talking about that, he looked hurt by that answer. Like, man, tell me anything but we wouldn't have been able to pay the guys, because I would have pulled money out of my pocket to pay these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, look, Rodman didn't really have much of a career after that, right? He played, I think, 30 or 32 games total after that 98 season. So I don't know what they would have gotten out of him. I think it would be tough. I think that Knicks team was still good, and I think they were hard hitters, similar to those early Pistons teams. That would have put an older team, that would have given them another run. And then you see the beginning of the Spurs dynasty with Tim Duncan.
And but they needed Steve Kerr. They needed Steve Kerr.
Yeah, but I don't know how much you're going to keep Kerr there. I don't know.
I would have loved to see it, though. I think everybody would have loved to see it. And I don't know, man. I just wouldn't bet against Mike in that situation, because you bring the team back, and I feel like he finds a way to win four. They find a way to get it done. Now, the front office things where you're talking about Dennis Rodman, that's fair. I feel like Phil Jackson, as we discussed on the pod, Phil and Dennis were kindred spirits, my friend. And I think Phil figured out how to get out of Dennis what they needed out of Dennis. And I think from seeing Dennis Rodman's interviews during this time, he didn't want to let Mike down, and he didn't want to let Scottie down. I think he felt those guys were family, just like he felt the Pistons were his family. And I don't think he plays only 30 more games if he found his way back on the Bulls after 98. I think if Mike and Scottie were there, he would have got his life together enough to play during the week and sneak off to WCW matches on the weekend if he had to, but he would have been there. For our final story today, we wrap up our coverage of The Last Dance, and we just want to leave you with a few overall reaction nuggets. Each crown comes with a cross, and I think being famous has a cost on it. And it was crazy to see just how famous Michael was, but then what that life really looks like from the inside. I think that's why he got close to Gus, and that's why he got close to the security guys. people he can trust, people he knew weren't around him just for being famous. I can speak to this firsthand. I saw with Tim Tebow when we were in Arizona for the national championship game. We didn't even know where we were going. I mean, they would not tell us where the buses were going. They would take us to eat places or take us different spots. We didn't know where we were going. Fans found out, would find out somehow. This is before Twitter. We didn't have Twitter, Instagram, or any of that. And people would just follow Tim Tebow around. So I can't imagine, like, that's a college football player. Michael Jordan, the most famous athlete on earth, like anywhere that he went and the crowds that followed him. And it is tiring. It's exhausting after a while. And Mike was tired and Mike was ready to go.
Yeah, you could see throughout the whole, I mean, through much of it, you realize that's why he was so close with his parents, because that was really the only people that he could have sort of comfortable access to. And like you said, security guards and those guys, it's not even about why they're around. They're probably the only ones he really could have around on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And kind of relax and not have to worry about, do I have to sign this or take this picture or ask this question? So,
or what angle? What angle are they coming at me? What favor are they going to ask for? What money are they going to ask me for?
Yeah. My approach was, I thought I'd cover a couple things, really two things that weren't covered in The Last Dance. And I'm sure there are plenty of things on the cutting floor that we will see when that director's cut comes out. But first piece was, and this goes all the way back to probably episode one or two, was that Doug Collins had MJ playing point guard in 1989. Between March 11th and April 23rd of the 1989 season, MJ averaged 30.4 points, 10.7 assists, 9.2 rebounds. Averaged that. And at one point, he notched 10 triple-doubles in 11 games.
Which is crazy to believe. So, and amazing that they didn't just keep him at point guard with those stats.
Yeah, but, you know, and this was, you know, part of the reason between the change from Doug Collins to Phil Jackson. Jackson got everyone involved. Collins, you know, MJ was doing it all. And I don't know how long he would have lasted if he played in that style of basketball at that time when you just get beaten up playing day to day. So
that's true.
That was a cool little tidbit. And then the other piece, Pat Riley retired MJ's number in Miami in 2003. So Jordan is the only player in any major professional sport to have his number retired by a team that he didn't play for, aside from Jackie Robinson's 42, which is retired across Major League Baseball, and Wayne Gretzky's 99. But both of those were done by the league, not by a team. So Riley retiring that number for Miami in 2003 had a little bit of an effect, right, Telly? That might have affected someone.
It affected Mr. James and the decision. And LeBron wasn't allowed to wear 23. The reason he switched numbers that year was because it was retired, so he couldn't wear 23.
Yep. So I thought those were two cool little tidbits. The other tidbit was the Knicks stat of the contract they offered him. I thought that was kind of cool. They didn't cover it, so that's what I took from it.
We need more episodes, man. It felt like 10 hours, but it also at the same time just felt like not long enough. But it was fun. Lasted. It got our minds off of no sports. It got our minds off of quarantine, and it was something to look forward to each week and discuss and talk about. Let's wrap this thing up.
For our first segment, we covered episode 9 of The Last Dance, the Pacers series, the flu game, and Steve Kerr's brief overview of his history. Definitely deserves his own 30 for 30.
Stephen Douglas Kerr. For the second segment, we covered episode 10 of The Last Dance, the Utah Jazz, the shot, and the breakup of the Bulls.
And for our third and final segment, we talked about our little nuggets that we took from the entire series, a need for the director's cut, and some film that we found on the cutting floor that was left out of The Last Dance that I thought we should add back in just to give some people some extra fun tidbits.
Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter, at Beyond TN Podcast.
Until next time, peace!